Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
NASCA member? Yeah, James, I am here. I'm having terrible storms out here, so if I disappear, the show will continue to go on, so no fear, because Joe is here. There you go. Okay, let me read a little bit about the mission statement, then I'll get more to you, and we have people now that are calling in. You know how the show runs. We do have a panel that, calls in. And people may ask you questions along the way. And so anyway, let me get started here. We do have a single purpose at NASCA to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so in two different ways. And number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, which we know this, is worldwide. Okay, number two is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. That is very, very important, the prevention, intervention, and recovery. And I think that you would probably agree with me on that. I was reading your bio to update myself. And as to the last time you're on, and I'm just so glad that you are here, James. I really am. I will say that you're from Toronto, Ontario. You are a returning NASCA family member. And you did experience horrific abuse, okay, from someone that was taking care of you, a caregiver, as a preteen. I'm not going to say too much more than that, because what we do, and you know this, we want you to tell your story. Remember, there's people listening who've, never heard of you before and don't know your story. And this, many times they're able to identify, too often they identify with what our guests have to say. I don't have to tell you that. How are you doing, James? James, are you there?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Great.
There was a bit of a glitch there for a second, but I'm doing. I'm doing good. It's been an incredibly difficult time with the lockdown. We're in week 8 right now, and it's so funny. Like, I never thought staying at home could be so hard.
I know. No one likes it. It's terrible for all of us, But, it's better to be safe than to be sorry, I don't know if you're supposed to wear your mask when you're out in your yard or not, but sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I always go, into stores or whatever, and we do make sure that we wear our masks. That we do, don't we? Because you just don't know what's going on out there. And you know what? They don't know 100% either. That's scarier, okay?
Well, that's the uncertainty, and the way that the story keeps changing is very unsettling in a lot of ways.
I know. It's a frightening thing. We can't see it. And yet we know that so many people have passed away from it, and it's just a horrific thing. But tonight we're going to talk about, you know, you. And I'm so proud of what you've done since the last time you're on, because I took the time to really read your bio, and you've been up to, you've been busy. That's what you've been busy.
I was reflecting on that before, before I came on, before I'm coming on with you, I feel so fortunate that I have my health, that I have, you know, the ability and the time and the means to do the work that I do. I don't take that for granted. I'm feeling actually rather blessed, to be in the situation that I'm in, as difficult as it has been, getting to this place. I'm in this place of, I'm in a state of grace right now, really.
Right. I hear you. And you should feel that way. But you know what? For the sake of the listening audience, and on Friday nights, a lot of times people just listen. Some do call in. Others listen later on because it's Friday. Educate us. Tell us about your, how this all started, your first memories of abuse and what happened to you, for God's sake, in your pre-teenage years. Go ahead.
Well, what happened, I'll work backwards, in the sense that, I had always understood, I knew the facts of what happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout my entire life, I just didn't understand, because I'm in my 50s now, and the abuse, the sexual abuse that I experienced, I was 10 or 11. And, I always knew the facts of what happened to me, or at least the memory that I have. I've remembered that the whole time along. I haven't always dwelled on it, but what was missing was I didn't understand I wasn't educated, right? And this is why, your work at NASCA is so important, about educating people, because that I could have grown up having experienced what I experienced, but not knowing that, not connecting the dots, not having the information to go, oh, right, I have a lot of anxiety, after most of my friends, stopped, binge drinking, in their teen years, I continued to do that into, later in life, things like that, that those are symptoms, that's part of the repercussions of what happens when you abuse a child. They become susceptible to those things. And, I had sought help my whole adult life. And none of the people, the psychologists, the counselors, none of them ever screened me for child sex abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just such a huge glaring, looking back on it, a huge glaring missing, right? I could know these facts about myself, know that I was abused, and never understand the connection between the symptoms that I was experiencing and that abuse. And so, the trigger for me into awareness was actually a really serious thing that happened when my son's teacher was arrested for possession and distribution and production of child pornography. Now, I know through your reading the website that, child pornography is a term that is being discouraged, I don't know what the correct term or what a better term for that is now, but I just want to note that, I'm sensitive to that, and that I'm very sensitive to, improving language around this. So you feel free to correct or guide or help me use better terminology. My son's teacher is arrested, and of course, for me, the first thing that goes through my mind is, has something happened to him? And, you know, he tells the truth and he says, no, nothing has happened to him. But for me, it's like, you know, I'm like going off the deep end. I'm like freaking out because there was a massive amount of material in this teacher's collection. There was like 40,000 video files or something like that. And it took the police 3 months to go through the evidence and conclusively say, no, your son's image is not in this man's collection, right? So for 3 months, I sat on pins and needles. And to the police's credit, they helped me through that period because they recognized that something was going on for me. And they'd seen it before, right? Like the people who work in the child's, you know, sex exploitation unit deal with people like me all the time. And so they actually referred me to a peer facilitated a place in Toronto here that runs peer facilitated group programs for adult survivors of child sex abuse. And that place is called the Gatehouse. And that for me was a significant turning point in my life because I didn't really see the relevance of it. Like I knew that I'd been abused as a kid, but I didn't really think that it had impacted me. I didn't understand. Right. And so, but at the same time, I trusted this officer because they, the lead investigator in my son's case, because they had treated me with such respect. You know, even though I was really upset and I was freaking out and the whole thing, you know, at public meetings and I was like, you know, dressing them down for not doing enough and things like that, they responded to me with great sensitivity. And that, to me, built trust with them. And so that they were professionals and experienced in this area, and they were saying to me, hey, you should maybe go look at this. I was like, there was something inside of me that trusted that. And so that was the beginning of my awareness of, you know, of the impact. And that was like a Pandora's box, you know, you know, I just went right into a whole world of like, wow, this is a really deep, it was like a subterranean. It was like going into a cave, you know,
right.
And there's a whole world in there. Right. And, yeah, so it's, you know, that was 2011. And, so as a filmmaker, that was my opportunity to tell my own story. And so I had the presence to begin self-documenting my own recovery. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I continued doing between 2011 and 2018, the end of 2018. And I could have kept going, but I had to sort of go, oh, you know what, I need to stop somewhere and begin actually consolidating this into a meaningful narrative, into a story. And so through doing that, it was kind of like making up my own future or doing what I missed developmentally as a young person growing up. Mm-hmm. in that I began to assemble the parts of my being into being more deliberately who I wanted to be in the world. And that has been just the process of doing that is just such a profoundly meaningful journey to me. And it's taken me all around the planet. You know, I've been just incredibly blessed with people who have responded when I've reached out to people, you know, to say, you know, do you want to be part of this film that I'm making? You know, they were saying yes, you know. So I reached out to people like, you know, because I was educating myself. I was reading. I got curious, you know, about trauma, and I started reading all kinds of books. I read, you know, the popular books, and I read books by people like Bessel van der Kolk, you know, who wrote The Body Keeps the Score.
Mm-hmm,
and so, you know, the natural thing for me to do was to reach out, you know, email them and say, hey, you know, I come and can we talk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, I never heard no. And so, you know, it was so interesting because, you know, the meeting with Bessel van der Kolk was when, I, because coming back to like being treated poorly by people in the helping profession, you know, because sometimes, you know, you get bad help, right?
No, you do.
And,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I actually had, even after I had been diagnosed as being a trauma survivor by my primary therapist, there was a period where I didn't have the financial resources to see them. And so I resorted to something that was free and available to me through a benefits plan. Mm-hmm. And it was a phone consultation service. And that person tried to talk me out of the trauma diagnosis. It was unbelievable. And I was so vulnerable and just, yeah, at that time, I went with it, you know, because that's, you know, I trusted that person and I shouldn't have, because there was a flag in my mind going, no, there's something wrong with this. But, you know, when you're vulnerable like that, you don't always have the presence to call them on it or to find a better answer in that moment. And it was, and the reason that they tried to talk me out of it was because in their screening of me, they were following a checklist of questions, and on that list of questions was, do you have flashbacks? And I answered no, because I didn't know the full definition of what a flashback was, and neither did they. And it wasn't until I got doing the interview with Bessel van der Kolk, and I'm sitting in his office, and we're having conversations about flashbacks and things like that. And he explains to me the concept of an emotional flashback.
Right.
Where there's no visual, and I'm just going, oh my God, that's my everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
is that state of fear of that body. And I'm just going, oh my goodness, this is what was so wrong with what that person was trying to tell me. Right. And it's just like, there's a part of me that wants to make a professional complaint about that person, because the harm that they're doing is profound. That they're presenting themselves as a professional and yet they don't have that piece of information. And so they're actively talking people out of a trauma diagnosis. That's such an incredible setback. So
let me say something to you here. Hold on a second. Because people are listening and they may not know this, but just because you go, okay, to a therapist, it's really up to us to interview the therapist first, okay? This is what we found out over the years. We didn't know it years ago, but we know it today. Because a lot of times the therapists, they don't have enough training, you know, in the field of child abuse to be effective in the proper way, you know, with their client. And they can do terrible damage by not recognizing certain symptoms that you might be displaying because they don't recognize it themselves. This can be true of anyone who thinks they only know a little bit or know a lot about child abuse, but they only really know a little bit about it, because we, the survivors, we know what we're going through. And a lot of times we don't know exactly how to put it in proper perspective or proper wording. You know, we just know how we feel. A trained therapist, you know, can look at you. And they can see by the way, your body motions, you know, they watch the way you move in your chair, they watch the way that they look at your face, they look at your eyes, they look to see how you're presenting yourself. And they can tell, you know, just by doing that, you know, if you're terribly uncomfortable, what it is, what parts of the conversation that you're having that's giving you the most problem. And then you can zero in on that and talk about it. I know exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, it's unfortunate because I have found out that even in schools, okay, even the professors so often just simply don't know enough about child abuse, because as they're taking their studies, they're not really taught that much. They might be given a couple of hours about child abuse, but that's it. Many times I've had to go to colleges to speak to the professors about child abuse, and then they can teach their students better, can't they? It's a crazy thing. But you know what I'm going to do? I want you to stop right there, because you've already told us quite a bit. And it's your story is fascinating. And I'm so sorry that you were abused. We all are. You know, we're survivors on this show. And we can identify, you know, with what you went through so easily because we went through it so often ourselves, maybe not quite the same way or under the same circumstances or the stories are not quite the same. I read your bio. You and I both like to drink an awful lot. Yes, we did. And I, you know, we'll get to that in a minute. Let me bring on the panel, okay?
Sure.
Tonight, yeah, we have Joe Kalk, and she's from Oregon. Joe, your mic is open. Please say hello to James Buffin.
Thank you. Hello, James. Thank you so much for being here. And I cannot believe that you've actually met Wessel van der Kolk, because that book was one that really saved me a lot. I often credit it with saving my life. So I wondered how you got into a program like that, and was he doing research or was he actually helping? Was he a therapist at that point?
Well, thanks for your question, Joe, and your acknowledgement. And what happened was, I read the book. I read The Body Keeps the Score, and it spoke to me in a similar way that it spoke to you. And so I quite simply emailed him, and I said I'd like to I'm going to come to Boston for your conference, because there's the trauma center in Boston hosts an annual conference. I think it's the longest running trauma conference in the world. I think it's like 20 years or 22 years it's been going. And so I went to the conference, and I met him very briefly, and he said, yeah, I can do an interview with you, but I can't do it now because the conference, I'm just so busy. So I had to return. I went back for a second visit, and that's when I was able to arrange that interview. But I was also on that visit, I was fortunate enough to also interview Richard Schwartz, who is the originator of internal family systems therapy, which is the final chapter or one of the final chapters of the book. Mm-hmm. And so I had a wonderful experience with him, and that actually opened up my understanding of why my experience with EMDR was so unsuccessful. And so if you're familiar, if you remember the chapter of the of the book in The Body Keeps the Score, and if you know anything about internal family systems therapy, the model of that is that all parts of you are valid parts, and they're independent of each other, and you are your own internal community, and the different parts of you have different roles and different functions and different purposes. One of those roles is the gatekeeper, and the gatekeeper's purpose is to keep you safe. And so what happens in EMDR, or what happened with me, is that because I didn't fully understand what I was getting into and how deep it could go and how fast it could go, it bypassed, it circumvented my gatekeeping, my internal gatekeeper. And it went too far without my own consent. And it backfired.
Oh, wow.
It was a terrible, terrible experience. So, this is the problem, again, with therapists who don't inform you or don't ensure that they have proper informed consent, or don't know otherwise, right? So it's anyways, that was another piece of the puzzle. So for me, being a filmmaker gave me the reason to reach out to these people, gave me the reason to get in the room with them and have these conversations and just meet some incredible people. I met Richard Tedeschi. So he's in North Carolina, and he in Charlotte, and he's the person who coined the term post-traumatic growth. He gave me two full days of his time in Charlotte, and then introduced me to other people that he knew in Australia who he did research with. So Jane Shakespeare Finch at the Queensland University of Technology welcomed me. And so I traveled actually to Australia with Richard Tedeschi, and he introduced me to Jane Shakespeare Finch, and then that opened up a whole other, you know, part of my research there, where I met people who, you know, pointed through their research to the fact that CBT, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, is mm-hmm. actually has a huge what's the word I'm looking for? It's when things backfire, they don't go well. It's
contraindication.
Yeah.
CBT
has a huge setback level or rate, you know, statistically.
Uh-huh.
And you know, these are things that, you know, that you don't get, you know, you don't hear this from therapists. You don't hear,
right.
you know, and it's just, you know, it's just, you know, and then, you know, it's just, I don't mean to heap on the therapists, because they're, you know, largely their intentions are good. Right. But, you know, I've had so many interesting interactions, and I think the thing that people forget is that they're people too.
Mm-hmm.
And that
yeah.
even though they're trained, we hold such high expectations of them that they have the answers to our problem. And the truth in my experience is that we have our own, as a community, we have the better answers for ourselves, because we know the truth.
That's right.
That. Thank you so much. I look forward to hearing more. Thank you.
And that's why I like the peer model, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. Thank
that's
you.
That's right. You brought up some very interesting things, and it's so true. It's so true, James. You know, with the therapist and with the therapy that you went through, and I'm so glad that you were able to, meet these people. I've heard some of the names. I'm familiar with it. But you actually met with them, and they were able to maybe even go a little bit deeper, you know, than a regular therapist. And it's so very important that we do understand the core issue. Many times when we fragment and we have different parts, and you call it as the gatekeeper, which I've heard of that, of course, before, because they're the one that's really in charge. They're the one that keeps you safe. You know, people have that. They need that. Otherwise, their minds would stay fragmented forever. So as you, with your flashbacks, as they're coming to you, we at NASCA, of course, we understand what flashbacks are. And but people out there that are just listening, maybe for the first time, they don't know what flashbacks are. You could be walking around a store, and anything can cause a flashback. It can be a smell. It can be a look. I used to get looks, and that would cause me to have flashbacks. It can be anything. And even though at times it can be terrifying, you know, scary, on the other hand, you learn from your flashbacks. And, you know, in time, you'll learn not to have so many flashbacks. This I do know, because I used to go through that, too. Now, we have someone else here. We have Michelle from California. This is Michelle Bless, and she's one of our ministers, and she's on tonight. And I'm so glad that Michelle is here. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Carol, and I'm from Westchester, Ohio.
Oh, that's right. It's CA again.
That's okay.
She just fixed it. It's all right. And it's funny.
I have three comments, real quick three comments. The first one is, I'm so happy that you're here. It's the first time I heard you, so I'm glad that you're here. And I'm grateful that to know that we have more people that are survivors. And listening to you, you are definitely a survivor. And the second comment that I want to make is that I am so, so happy and grateful for God that during the time of your little boy, when this incident occurred, teacher, that he was not a victim of that. Because when you were sitting there saying that you had to wait 3 months, and, you know, and I'm sure waiting to find out whether or not he was a victim, all they did was just brought flashbacks for you. What happened to you as a kid? So that's a lot to deal with. So I'm so happy that he wasn't a fatality, and I'm happy that they put that teacher in prison. He did go to prison, right?
Yes, he did.
Thank God. And my third comment quickly is that I'm glad that you're talking about therapists and your own personal experience, what happened to you dealing with a therapist that was negative. People got to understand, I want to put this out here, that, and what you mentioned earlier too, Carol, that everybody that has credentials, you know, that doesn't mean that they're perfected. That doesn't mean that they know what they're doing. You can, you know, you can literally damage a person to the point where you set them back all the way to the bottom, especially when it's dealing with sexual child abuse. That's a very dangerous thing. And, you know, to me, in my personal opinion, you know, they have some people that mean well. They have some people that go to school and they read a book about child abuse. But if you ain't got the experience, or if you ain't sat down and studied with survivors and victims, you have no clue at all how to deal with that. So I'm so glad that you're talking about that and that you mentioned that. And, again, thank you for being here. I'm looking forward to hearing some more.
Well, thank you, Michelle. That's very validating to hear you say those things. I appreciate your acknowledgement that that my son didn't experience that. I want to step back for 1 second and just for the sake of balance and for people, you know, who don't know me and might be somebody who has never, you know, had a therapy experience, that I've also had a very positive experience with one therapist in particular, who has made a tremendous difference in my life, and who is trauma informed. And so I would say that, you know, like if you're not getting the help that you think, like if it feels wrong, don't just trust that the therapist goes, oh, it's going to work out one day. Like shop around, like, you know, treat it like buying a car, or, you know, like don't be satisfied with anything less than the best care. And if it's not working, move on, find somebody else. Because there are really good therapists out there. There is really good information.
Oh, yes, it is.
It's like if you're not having a good experience, move on. Like that's all I got to say. Because I've had an amazing, and that was the thing. Like that therapist that served me well, completely changed my life.
Mm-hmm. You know? Amen.
Right. And they because what they did was they gave me information. You know, her words to me were, "We're gonna thaw you out." You know, and she referred me to Peter Levine's book, Waking the Tiger, right?
Okay.
Which is another key book. And he's somebody who is not in my film, which I wish he was, but I just couldn't get to everybody. But, you know, this is like his work is so important, you know, the somatic healing, right? And shaking and just like giving people hope that you can work through it, or that, you know, because it's like my experience is that the physical symptoms don't go away, right?
Mm-hmm.
That it continues. But now that I'm educated, I'm not looking for the reason in my immediate environment for why I feel that way.
Mm.
I can own it, right? And I can go, oh, right, there it is again. And I can go, right. And then I can reframe it. And I can go, right, this is an impact of something that happened to me. And I can have compassion for myself. And I can self-care for the physical symptoms and the discomfort that I'm going through, and recognize it for what it is. And that, for me, makes all the difference.
Wow, I like that. That was good. Yes. Well said. Well said.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Especially the part when you said, you know, it's more so like self-comforting yourself. Give yourself self-compassion. Give yourself love. You have to look within you to love you. And I tell people, I'm going to say this real quick, that when we as an adult, we suffered a child abuse, right? And now that we're an adult, you can always say to yourself, I'm going to protect that little person inside me. You know, whether you are a man, I'm going to protect that little boy in me. Or if you're a girl, I'm going to protect that little girl in me. I'm not going to I'm not going to let anything happen to her. You want to heal that person within ourselves, because I say this all the time. When you suffer child abuse as a child, and whatever age that happened to you, and then we start growing up, meaning our body's growing, you know, our physical parts is growing, we becoming an adult. But when whatever year that incident happened to you, where you stop growth in your mind. So that child is still there. And that's where we want to go within ourselves to protect and heal that child within that stopped growing at that time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll add to that, because, you know, this is the gift of healing and of recovery, is that now, because like for decades, like I've always professionally aspired to being a filmmaker, and I always worked under what I believed to be my true capacity, and I always felt thwarted. I always felt uncomfortable in professional situations, and I've worked all around the world with really amazing people. Like we're talking like people, Oscar winners, right? Like this is the community that I've worked in professionally as a technician. And my goal was to be a filmmaker, to, you know, in my own right, to be a director, a creator of content, not somebody working on somebody else's movie as a technician. And so in that relationship to my community, I always felt shame because I wasn't where I wanted to be. And so it was a huge trigger for me, and I felt trapped for a really long time. And I was trapped in a cycle of attempting to assert myself in that environment. And that shut off the very thing that I needed to activate to do what I wanted to do, which was to be curious, to explore, to play, right? Sounding familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is all the things in childhood that I missed because, as of age 11, I, became in some truncated way my child version of what I thought an adult should be. And so I shut down curiosity, and I turned on the bravado that I had to be a certain way, and that way was the way that I thought that other people needed me to be. And so through this recovery process, I've stopped trying to assert myself. I've reignited my curiosity about the world, and it's led me down some really rich paths, and it's just like, It's a gift, right? Recovery is a gift.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Yes. Amen. Yes, it is.
Yep, that's right. Absolutely. Well, I thank you for that, Michelle. And I thank you also, too, James, because you're describing so well your feelings, your most inward, feelings about yourself and feelings of inadequacy. We all have these feelings of inadequacy and the shame, you in the back of your mind, you know what you went through. You're coming to realization as the time goes by of what you came, went through. And but even as a child with the symptoms, and so often, psychiatrists, all they ever do is they treat the symptoms. They don't get to the core issue, okay? Because when you were in eighth grade, you started to drink. You would go to school blasted at times, and so did I. I suffered from horrible panic attacks, which I don't have today, and where you just wanted to, like, melt away. You didn't even want to face your peers. You didn't want to be around your peers, and you'd sit in the back of the room, and I used to sit in the back of the room, too. This is why I said at the beginning of the show, when people listen to your story, we always think that we're unique, but we're not unique because there's so many people, out there who have gone through many of the same things, maybe not quite the same, but many of the same things that we've gone through. And it causes certain types of behavior from us. Maybe you were like a wise guy. I think I saw in here they thought maybe you were like a wise guy. You turned very tough. I turned very tough. Other people become very meek. You know, they'll be inward or they'll be outward. And it's all a facade, because what you're doing is, you're first of all, you're trying to learn who the heck you are, what you are, why did I go through this? There's so many things that go through people's minds when they're growing up and they're in a position, you know, where they have been very abused sexually. It could be sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally, or from neglect, all of which causes trauma. And some people go through all of that, okay? And it's a terrible thing. And it's like peeling the onion, of course, you know what that means, where you take the layers away. And as you're taking the layers away of the onion, you're bringing forth more information about you. That child within then screams, because all of a sudden they're seeing too, you know, I was there, you were there, you were one person, but, you know, this is what we are. And then we have to come to learn to accept ourselves. And the things that you're speaking about shows, you know, a progress, to say the least. You're doing fine. You're doing well. And I, too, am very happy that your son was not a part of the pornography, okay? Mm. Because, you know, when children are being photographed and, you know, and they're made to do certain things, these horrible people out there who love to buy, you know, the pornography, and children are in sexual, you know, positions and all these other things. All they're doing is making the industry of that sort, you know, they're making them rich. And these poor children, what they go through as being the actors or the players, it's disgusting. It's not right. And I think they're both equally as guilty, those that go and look for it and those, of course, that produce it. So tell us more about, all right, we know about your school. You know that you were sort of like, you know, you were drinking an awful lot. Sometimes you'd pass out. Some days I was drinking before school. I sat at the back of the class avoiding teachers, and they never figured out that you were drinking, right?
Well, if they did, they didn't say so, you know, and, mm-hmm. You know, it's likely, I have to give them the benefit of the doubt, I think, you know, that, you know, but it's just, yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, it's like, I look now at young people who are the age that I was when I was behaving that way.
Yeah.
And as an adult, as a parent, and I just go, wow, you know, like if I saw a person that age, if I saw a 13-year-old behaving the way that I was behaving when I was that age, I would, you know, immediately go, there's something wrong with this picture, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, I managed to evade detection. You know, I was pretty good because I knew that I didn't want to get caught, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's, yeah, it's just, it's tragic to think that there are young people doing that now, and younger too, right? You know, like that's,
oh, sure.
Right, mm-hmm. that's, and I guess, you know, the thing that I'm present to in this moment is the shame and the stigma that goes with the experience of being a young person who is then additionally, you know, heaping a secondary layer of shame and stigma on themselves, because mm-hmm. that's what I was going through, right? You know, I was ashamed that I was behaving that way. I knew it was wrong, but I didn't know how else to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did the best I could with and that's why I identified as a survivor. I did the best I could, and I took care of myself in the only way that I knew how to, with the only resources that I had,
right.
as a child. And really, you know, the thing, and this is the takeaway for me around this, is that there's such shame and such stigma around those, that behavior, but really what's going on is people who are doing that, and myself included, are simply attending to their own injury. It's an injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe needs to be viewed that way by the medical community.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
And by, you know, and if we do that, if we can do that as a society, you know, mm-hmm. then we will get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But until we do, then those young people, and I'm lucky that I didn't end up on the street, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so many do.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a third level of shame where then they become homeless. And then it's like it's just a terrible cycle and spiral, towards debilitation that is then supported by us as a culture because we look at those people and we judge them, right? Mm-hmm. And what we're really doing is judging people who are victims. And the best term for it that I've ever heard actually comes from Peter Saunders, who's the founder of NAPAC, which is the National Association for People Abused in Childhood in England. He always uses the term victim survivor, you know, because I've been looking for the right term for myself for some time. And I think that's the one, right, is victim survivor, because, you know, I'm more than a victim. I'm also a survivor, but I'm a survivor because I'm a victim. So it's, you know, I think victim survivor is the right term, but it's like, that's what we're looking at, you know, is a pandemic of, you know, like where these problems build mm-hmm. in layers. And that's, you know, in the same onion analogy mm-hmm. in a sense mm-hmm. that it's building outwards into a problem. Right.
And so
that's, you know, but again, I think that the simple reframing of it, if we could just do that, if we could educate the medical profession mm-hmm. to identify this as an injury and treat it with the respect that it, and the compassion that you would mm-hmm. if you had a child who came in with a broken arm. If we could do that, then, you know, then we're getting somewhere.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I think we need to educate even communities, too, as well. I mean, people in general, society needs to be more educated. I do see a difference, James. You know, I do see a difference. 10 years ago, I wrote my book, Panic Child. And it's funny, when it was first put on Amazon, there was only one other book such as mine. One other book on the child abuse, okay, and a memoir type of book. That's the way that I wrote it. And today, if you look on Amazon, one thing I will say is if you look on Amazon now, my God, there it is flooded with books. People are just, you know, there's a plethora of books. So they're all over the place and on child abuse and stories and things like what you've been through, I've been through, the panel has been through. So people are talking. But still in all, that same taboo type of look, especially when it comes to the sexual abuse, they'll speak about physical abuse, mental abuse as they can see it, emotional abuse, neglect. People are more apt to speak about, you know, things like that. But when it comes to the sexual, a lot of times they cringe so, and why wouldn't they, okay? But they cringe so, and instead of making a phone call, like the 1-800-4-CHILD number, I always tell people to call that 1-800-4-CHILD, and you can stay anonymous, and just report the fact that you of what you think. You don't even have to be right, James, okay? How would it have been if way back when you were in school, that teacher who looked at you as a pet, you know, she looked at you sort of like, this is my pet underachiever. Well, why aren't we underachievers? You know, why wouldn't you be? So often, you know, kids don't go to school and prosper. Instead, they become inward. And we hide behind alcohol and other drugs and things like that because we don't know how to behave. We only know how we feel. It's an inward type of inward depth that only a survivor, and it is a survivor, would understand, okay? So if we educated the school systems, if we educated communities, if you see a kid that's not dressed well, because you said that you would, you know, dress down, so to speak, to give that appearance of being the tough guy. And I can identify with that. Not that I'm a guy, but I would, I know what you mean. I'd wear the leather jacket, you know, all this other stuff. And, you know, all the things that we do to try and protect, to try and also at the same time, we don't want people to see too much either because we're so ashamed or I felt dirty. I felt dirty. I didn't want people to see the real me, you know. So we go through all these things and we have to educate, you know, the teachers and like you said, the medical field even more because they're not educated. They're not educated enough. to spot certain things. Like I said earlier on in the show, they don't see because they don't understand. Now, you've come to a point in your life, or it says here in your bio, that you started to film your own recovery. Why don't you explain to us exactly what that means and how you went about it?
Well, what I did was basically amounts to self-witnessing. So, like, I hear over and over again, you know, the role of the witness as it pertains to people who have been abused, is that it's a very, very common experience that people have this need to be heard, to be validated, to be witnessed. And it's not always possible to get it from other people. And in fact, it can be dangerous because oftentimes, and this is why the pursuit of justice is such a trap, because there's no incentive for perpetrators to take responsibility for what they've done in the criminal justice system, because it goes against their better interest. You know, not only you know, do they get to, you know, the opportunities, future opportunities taken away from them to, you know, harm other people, but they also you know, they could go to jail, right? So, you know, it's like there's absolutely no incentive for them to take responsibility for what they did. So the pursuit of being validated by or witnessed by the person who harmed you, that's a very slippery slope and a difficult path to go on. Like there's not much likelihood that you're going to get that. So, you know, and there's all kinds of systemic things that go against that. But the act on the other side of the coin, the act of healing and of self-witnessing for me has been very fruitful. So what that looked like was basically, I mean, it started with a selfie outside the police station when I went to make the report. You know, this is, you know, the one of the first things I did was I went to the police and reported, the person who had assaulted me, and you know, I knew their I only knew them by their nickname because they were a scout leader and they went by a scout nickname, and so that person has never been located, actually. But anyway, so, you know, what it looks like again is that I just basically pointed the camera at myself every opportunity that I had when I was doing something actively towards self-advocating for my own well-being and for my healing. And so what, you know, the things that I did were, you know, I educated myself. So I documented myself reading and educating myself. At a certain point, you know, I went to the, you know, peer support groups in Toronto at the Gatehouse, and so I started interviewing people there. But what I also did was I had another camera shooting behind the scenes. So it was always not just the content of the people that I was interviewing, but that it was me interviewing them. So it was like, you know, a film within a film kind of thing. And that has been a very valuable experience for me, because then what I get to do is I get to control the future of my own story, because now I get to craft that into the story of what James did on his journey. And that's, you know, that's I've got like over 130 hours of footage for this, you know, 90-minute film that I'm still editing, you know. But, you know, I documented myself as I went. You know, around the world, I went to 8 different countries on 5 different continents while I was putting this story together. And I always filmed in this manner where, as a professional from, you know, in the film industry, I knew the technical aspects of how to make a film and how to do the camera work and how to, I did everything, you know, I was a one person crew for most of it. I had other people helping me, but, I was able to do the technical aspect of the filming as second nature, which was the benefit of having done all the technical work, you know. So there's always an upside to the struggle, right? Like there's always something that, that good that can come out of it. And this is what the good that came out of all those years where I felt I was working under my potential. Another way to look at that is I was preparing for this moment. And so yeah, that's some of you know how the filming looked, right? But
I think
you know,
it's wonderful what you did, though. You see, because you're coming, and I'm sure that all the time that you're filming all these things that you're speaking about, you're getting closer to knowing yourself better. It gave you focus. It gave you vision. It gave you vision. You knew what the end results were because you know your story, okay? So, but you were able to get closer to yourself and not to accept what happened to you, but maybe to understand a little better as to why. And you also found out, too, how many people, while you're doing this, while you're at the gatehouse, you're finding out how many people went through similar experiences. And you know, too, with men, it's so much harder with men because, men are supposed to be, you know, macho. They're supposed to be tough. And how many times did anyone ever say to you, oh, just get over it? You know, okay, this type of behavior, this is what happened to you when you were a child growing up. But just get over it, okay? It's now. It's today. So you're 2020, but it may have happened many years ago. Doesn't make that any less. The point is it happened. And you're quite right when you say that as you're growing through your years, even though it was maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago, all of a sudden, it doesn't matter. All of a sudden, you know, you're starting to understand better why you behaved the way you did and why you felt the way you did and what triggers you, what doesn't trigger you, and how you can deal with it. So, you know, this is something that people have to understand. That we who are, you know, in recovery and those of us who are, and indeed you have the victim and then you have the survivor. You're a survivor because the day you're standing, you're still a survivor. You're a survivor of what happened to you. That makes you a survivor. What makes you also, too, today, though, is that not only are you a survivor, but look what you've done. Okay, look what you've been able to do. I want to go to the panel again. I find this all very fascinating. I just have to tell you this. I want to go to Joe and see if she has any questions or comments to make. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay. Thank you. James, I liked how you referred to your creating your future. That's mm-hmm. what I see so many people are stuck in their past. And don't realize that today they're creating their future, and that you recognize that. And it's sort of like some of us write books, and you are doing doing your work in a visual format. So I just think it's a great project that you have, and I think it's going to be so helpful to others.
Oh, thank you. That's lovely to hear, Joe. I really appreciate it. You know, the work is its own reward, and mm-hmm. that's the foundation that I'm standing on. And so, you know, I'm confident that at the end of it, I'm going to have something to show that's going to take things to another level. But mm-hmm. the beauty of the situation for me is that I'm no longer striving to do it to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the work is its own reward already. I've already won. Getting it out there in the world will help. I know that it's going to make a difference. I know that it's going to open up beautiful conversations because I have similar experiences with previous films that I've made, right? But it's like I'm in no rush, and I know that I have to pace myself because you know this is deep work. This is hard work, and it's triggering, and the you know the tendency is to you know head down and just get it over with. And it's like no, like be measured about it, right? Pace yourself. You know, this is not a marathon. This is an ultra marathon. you know, this is going to be done, this is like 10 years of my life to make this film, right? So I'm looking forward to getting it out there in the world, but I can't focus on that part yet. Like, if there's any producers out there or distributors out there who are listening to this, you know, I'm looking for people to collaborate with, because I'm bumping up against my own limits. You know, I need to find collaborators with to help me get this into the world. And that world, you know, has just dramatically changed. Like, the whole model of distribution is going to dramatically shifted away from you know, theatrical distribution. So it's like, well, where are we going to go now? So there's this whole uncertainty, which I'm sure is going to hold potential and possibilities for new ways to get it into community. But that's the real place that I want. I want theatrical experiences in community. I want community conversations. That's what this is about. It's about facilitating in-person conversations with audiences where I can be there with them and have that conversation with them. In addition, it's not just about getting my film into the world. I want to be there.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and that's the purpose of this, is to get related to a whole bunch of people and have the work be the vehicle for that, you know? So.
Perfect.
That's great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for that, Joe. I see Darlene here. Okay, she's down. She just came on a while ago, I guess. I don't know. I don't see any hold time. But anyway, I'm going to go to Michelle, and then we'll go down to Darlene. I hope she's been on for a while so she can make a comment. But, you know, let me say something to you. We had at one time, we had a guest that came on, and he had, like, a doll that he would, ventriloquist. He was like a ventriloquist, you know, that type of doll. And he was like telling a story through the doll. And he would go into the local theaters and actually tell his story, and the doll and he would like talk back and forth. And there was, you know, interaction between the audience and this person, okay, who was doing this. I don't know how well he did, but I do know that he was around for quite some time. I do like what you're doing, okay? And I think that I do know for a fact that when you interact with the audience, not only does it keep them awake and interested, but they become a part of, and they become a part of the story just by what they're saying. And those people that are out in the audience, that many of them have had, you know, again, similar type of situations happen to them in their lives. They just don't talk about it. So by you bringing it out, you're actually helping them. This is another way of helping people. Not only just through what you're doing with your filming, but also with your interaction with your audience. So that's a darn good idea. I like that. Let me bring on Michelle, okay? Michelle, was there something that you wanted to ask? And then I'll go down to Darlene.
No, not well. I mean, it's kind of, I just want to say that he was said that he was looking for sponsors or something to help him get his film out. And it's interesting, I had got an email I was in my email now looking for, because I wanted to find out whether or not you heard of these people. I was approached from some media company that is interested in making my book into a movie and to do a trailer and all that to get it going. And they said, oh, some people, Hollywood people interested in it. And then, so, you know, I respond. I'm like, okay, well, that sounds good. That's interesting. And then they said, but the only thing you have to do is pay $7,000 to production. And I'm like, huh? So, and they said, and I, you know, so, and then no pressure. They were like, well, you know, I'm like, what? And so I would say to myself, if I'm being approached, why, I got to come up with some money. But then I also know sometimes you got to spend money, if you have to invest money to receive. So I'm not really sure if this is all legit. I wanted to find out whether you heard of them, but I can't. I'm looking for the email. I'm still searching. So
I would be.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. I would be suspect of that. I think that you should if it was me, I wouldn't be communicating with them anymore after a message like that. That to me does not sound like a professional approach at all. In fact, it should be the other way around. If they want you to be involved, if they're a professional company, they should be offering you money, not asking you for money.
Right.
That's what I said. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's enough said. I just needed to confirm me. That's enough said. Because I'm like,
okay.
No, that don't sound right. But thank you so much for that. And you mentioned, you mentioned a lot, but I want to say that for you, you said that you end up going to a therapist and that person end up being a great person for you because of your bad experience. And I want to say I can really relate to that because before the person that I deal with now and been dealing with since the year 2000, prior to her, the first person I met, I was in total shutdown because they said, now keep in mind, this person said to me, you know, you need to get over that. So hearing that word, get over it, is a trigger from people that used to say that before my healing process, you know. And what I mean by doing that process, I was a victim. So it just took me back. When my grandfather, when he was raping me, get over it. When my uncle was messing with me, get over it. When the commander in the military messed with me, get over it. I mean, that, you know, that word. So it just shut me totally down. So by the time I met this new therapist, which was over 23 years ago, the first time I met her, I said to her, oh, I'm not going to say anything. And she said, well, I'm going to sit here with you anyway, and whenever you're ready to talk, I'm right here. So I sat there for 2 months, 3 months. 90 days, we meet nothing. I would talk to her. And then finally I say, why are you putting up with me coming in here if you're not going to say anything? You know, and she said, because I'm here for you, and I'm here to listen, and I'm here to help if you allow me to. And she said, I'm already helping you by being here as company. I just want you to know that I'm here. So that, like, threw me, like, okay. So then I just slowly started talking. Well, we've been talking and still talking. That's been 23 years ago, and she's still a therapist to me today. So I get what you're saying, and I like when you say that all therapists are not bad therapists. They're not. Do choose wisely and check that person. Find out about their credentials, you know, before really getting deep involved, because this is your fantasy in your life that we're talking about, you know. Do you agree?
Absolutely. One of the terms that I really love comes from Richard Tedeschi, who uses the term expert companion. You know, that they're walking the path with you, and that, you know, that's, you know, my term for healing and in place of get over is integrate, and the way that I like to think of it is kind of like, you know, if you've ever seen a fence next to a small tree, you know, and the tree grows and rubs against the fence. And initially the bark wears off a bit, and so there's a bit of harm that's done to the tree or a bit of wear on the tree, but eventually the tree grows around the fence. And then sometimes, you know, if it grows enough, the tree actually, you know, they cut the fence down, but there's still part of it stuck in the tree. It's like you absorb it. You know, at first it's an irritant, at first it's a problem, but eventually you outgrow it. And so you integrate it into you, and it's still a part of you. The scar is still there, and the evidence of it is still there, but you have it, not the other way around.
Oh, that's good. Well said. Yes.
Yeah, I like that too. I like that too, Michelle. Yeah, thank you for that. I just want to say too, also, what you just said a couple minutes ago, James. When someone writes a book, or in your case with a movie, you're involved with that, you're quite right, because I had that happen to me also. They wanted me to make a trailer, and I put forth $4,500. I did. Yes, I did. To make this trailer.
That happened to you, Carol?
Oh, yes, $4,500.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's all right. And so let me tell you what happened, though.
They said, we want to make a trailer.
Mm-hmm. They wanted me to make a trailer, and of my book, okay, they wanted to do it, and I didn't see what parts of my book they were using, okay? I'm warning people out there who are going to go to self-publicists, or they're going to self-publish it. Don't do this if you can help it. It may be cheaper, but you don't know what you're getting yourself into, okay? Now,
okay.
I'm just going to say this really quickly. Their legal department got a hold of the material, whatever was put in that trailer, which I never got a chance to see. And they said it was too volatile. Now, this is going back years ago, okay, when child abuse was really a taboo, really, really taboo. And so I said, I'm getting an attorney. Well, the minute I said I was getting an attorney, they then sent me back my $4,500, and I found another publisher. I just got out of it. I ended up with Author House. So you have to be really, 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 really careful, okay, out there. Because like you said, James, you're not supposed to give them money. They're supposed to come to you and say, we're going to offer you a certain amount of money, and we'll go from there. And not even be caring if you have an attorney. You should have an attorney, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's something to be careful about. So I just wanted to, you know, let people know that. Just be careful. Okay, we have Darlene from Tennessee. And Darlene, how are you tonight? You okay?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I appreciate you sharing your story, James. Is that your name?
His name
thank
is James.
You. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Thank you, Darlene.
You're welcome. I like the fact about what you also said about survival. Because whenever survivor, because in my book, I'm putting that I used to be a victim, but now I choose to be a survivor and win this war.
Yeah.
So that hits a special note with me as well. So I appreciate that. And yes, it is important finding the right therapist because. Oh, well, the first few therapists I had were people that was pedophiles themselves that did things to me that they shouldn't have, okay? But once I finally found a good psychiatrist that believed in me and believed my stories and knew that I was not making them up, you know, I latched onto that guy with range, you know what I mean? I latched onto him good because he was honest and but then, of course, when insurance changes and stuff, you don't have much of a choice about who you go to see, which is a shame. And sometimes you're put with some bad people. Like after I done finally uncovered all that about my daddy doing sexual things with TV, you know, after I had uncovered all that, years later, this one therapist had told me that I wanted my dad to have sex with me, but it never happened. And boy, was I ticked off, you know. Finally, my family doctor, you know, got it to where that they could get a therapist and have it in that office because I was allergic to the medications. And they said, no, you just don't want to take it. And she had to save my life so many times because I was taking that medicine, but they were going to stop my check if I didn't take it. And yet I kept going to her because I was near death because I was taking it and I was allergic to it. So, you know, that's a prime good example of, you know, finding good therapy, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, I'll add, I'm going to go a step further. And I think that, you know, there is a really big problem in the industry, and I'm going to call it an industry, the therapy industry. And I was shocked. Like I, as a video producer, at one point, I'm not going to say who this was, but I was hired by like a very prominent therapist to videotape a conference that they were leading. It was a 2-day conference, and the theme of the conference was trying to teach these therapists how to own their crap and take responsibility for them. Yeah. And you would not believe how difficult that was for this person to train these people. He would bring them up onto the stage with them and he would work with them. And they all went down the rabbit hole and predominantly were either blaming their clients or their family for their own problems. And they couldn't get their heads around it. And it was just like, and at the end of it, I could see this guy leading this conference, shaking his head going, "You people don't get it." And it was like, I'm talking like a room full of 300 people. I was shocked.
Yeah. You know, one thing that one of my therapists, she was a sweet lady, and she did help me a lot with my agoraphobia. But when I caught her lying to one of her coworkers, and then I asked her if she ever lied to me, and she said yes, and she says she just don't want to hurt my feelings, and she lies to me a lot. I go, how do you expect me to heal knowing that I know that you lie to me just, you know, to not hurt my feelings? So I fired her, you know, because of that.
Yeah, good for
and
you.
And I want a therapist that wanted to, where I could grow, where I could get better. I didn't want to stay in the same, you know, boat, even though she was a nice therapy. You know what I mean? That wouldn't get me anywhere.
Well, this is like really, and this is I think that the takeaway here that I would really love to you know, for people, you know, who are listening to this to hear is to, you know, really, if you're in a relationship with a therapist, and you're feeling that there isn't something that's not right, don't stay. Like, you know, like, first of all, try and call them on it. If you're comfortable doing that, call them on it and see what happens and see what their response is. And if their response doesn't satisfy you and they don't take it back, or they don't own it, or they, you know, try to, you know, put it back on you, like, that's the time to get out, right? Like, that's like your well-being is so critically important. And you, like, that little voice inside of you is right.
Right.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
We got to be honest with ourselves to be able to grow. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So we don't need a therapist who is dishonest with you. You know, to grow, you're going to have somebody that's going to be honest, even though it's tough.
Tough is the word.
I like that. Well, what you said is quite right, darling. I mean, listen, just because you're with a therapist, okay, that therapist is working for you. You're not working for the therapist. Always remember that. And if you have that gut feeling, like I like to say, that something is not quite right here, then you're probably right. Give it a little bit more time, and you'll know where that gut feeling is right, and then just simply walk away. Because we all deserve a good treatment, and we deserve good treatment and good therapy. You know, if you go to a therapist or a psychiatrist or a counselor, you have to have good treatment. And my God, I went to a counselor once years ago, and this lady fell asleep while I was talking. I said, "What? Oh no!" And then so I got up and I walked out of her office. And she was pretty high up there, you know, and she didn't care about child abuse. She just wanted the money that was coming in. So, yeah, you have to be really, 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 really careful. And you can ask, you know, write down certain questions. How long have you worked in the field? How much education have you had about child abuse? You know, write down questions like that and interview your therapist-to-be before you actually hire that person. And then that'll give you a little, you know, a little safety net there, because they should have the right answers, okay?
Right.
But anyway,
I'd like to circle back to that for a sec, because I think you're bringing up a really great point. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking back to my intake, at the Gatehouse,
right?
And just how frightened I was, you know, like I was petrified that they were going to disqualify me, that they were going to say, no, you know what you experienced, you know, you didn't experience anything bad enough to, you know, to, you know, you don't belong here. Right. And that's, you know, the one of the big impacts, right, of being abused as a kid is it's a break in belonging. Right. And so, you know, that was a huge fear of mine. So I don't know how, like, Carol, I'm just wondering, like, maybe some advice on what people can do in that situation if they're feeling so vulnerable, and they're with this person that, you know, they don't quite trust or that something doesn't feel right. Like, how do you muster up the strength, or like, what do you say to them?
You have every right. Okay, a client has every right to say that I don't feel comfortable. I'm not feeling like this is going well. I don't feel like I'm getting anything from, you know, this type of therapy. And then I would go into how many years have you had, you know, of counseling yourself. Have you ever been in this position? Are you a survivor? When you went to school, did you understand? Were you taught? Were you taught about child abuse? You can go into it that way. Many times, yes, when people go to a counselor, to a therapist, a psychiatrist, they are feeling so bad about themselves that their mind is all, you know, like racing. They can't think straight. And they're just hoping this person is going to be the answer to their life. Okay? But that's not always the case. And like Michelle had said much earlier, too, that if you get the wrong therapist, or the wrong counselor, the wrong psychiatrist, they can do terrible damage. So it's good to, you know, people out there, I want you to understand that, you know, child abuse is being spoken about much more today with the counselors and the therapists and the psychiatrists. Maybe not as much as we'd like, because, like, if you haven't walked the walk, how can you talk the talk? That's what I always say. And so you might have to go through two, maybe three therapists before you find the one that you know is going to help you. And that's normal, too. You don't always find the right one the first time. You just simply don't. You have to sometimes shop around.
Right,
and then,
right.
You know,
good.
Yeah. And that's what you do.
You make me think of I think it was Winston Churchill who said, "If you're going through hell, keep going."
Mm-hmm. If you're going through hell. Oh, okay. Okay. Right.
Right.
There you go.
I want to give you some good news.
Say again.
I want to give you some good news. Remember that I was so afraid because my therapist. Mm-hmm. Because this Corona thing, and he ended up finding another job. And so I said I had to start all over again with a new therapist. Me and her are working out good, and it's been the second thing today. We actually talked today, and I feel really good about talking with her. She's very supportive. So that's good.
Oh, congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. That's right. And that is
so
something to be
congratulated. Like I said, there's good therapists. So anybody listening, you know, like James has said too, find a good therapist. It's very important.
That's right.
I'd like to also share. You know, it's important to, again, to respect our own limits, right? And you know, I'm just coming out now of a phase where, for quite some time, I haven't spoken publicly. And you know, like I've been producing work that is about this, but I haven't spoken in person, or I haven't, you know, had, you know, public conversations like this. I've been putting my work out in the world, but that's different, you know, because you have a level of control over that, and you can package it and produce it and all that kind of stuff. But this is the first time that I'm sort of reemerging back into community, and I just want to express my gratitude for the invitation to be here, and for this conversation this evening.
Well, I just want to thank you for being here, and you did a fine job. You did a fine job. You absolutely did, and you're so knowledgeable in what you're doing. And it gives another option, you know, another way for people to heal, because as you're going along in your journey, okay, you're healing as you're going along. And this is why I said you had vision. Your vision, maybe you don't understand the very end of your vision, but as you go along, you're seeing it. It's like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, for lack of better wording, and there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that is called healing. Okay, and that's why you're not a victim anymore. You are a survivor. We're all survivors, but we all survive at a different level. And there is one thing I do want to ask you right here, because at the very end, and the show is almost over, it went so fast, and I would love to speak to you for hours, but it says here, you're especially proud of the special episode about the Blue Ribbon March in Bolivia. Can you tell us a little bit about that quickly, because we're running out of time here?
Sure. Well, the Blue Ribbon March in Bolivia was started by Brisa de Angulo, who is a Colombian woman living in Bolivia. And her and her partner, Parker Palmer, have the Breeze of Hope Foundation in Cochabamba, Bolivia, and they have this march every year. And I went down, I had the privilege of going down twice to film their march, where they have thousands of people who march through the streets, you know, protesting against sexual violence. And, mm-hmm. and you know, it's just the leadership, you know, of these people in this country, where it's one of the poorest, if not the poorest country in South America, where, you know, women's rights to start with are you know, they're way less, they have way fewer rights than women in North America do, and never mind female children, and children in general, you know. So, you know, that they're living in that hardship to start with, and they have this level of leadership, to me, is exemplary. And that's the reason that I went there twice to film with them and to support them. And to make the video to help the Breeze of Hope, and to help them promote themselves. And then they went on to win some international awards. They received a big $100,000 award, £100,000, I think it was, award from England a couple years ago. You know, but the other thing that is important is that, you know, everywhere I go, when I film, you know, I also do everything I can to train the people that I work with. So in filmmaking, so that they can further empower their own voices. And so when I was in Ghana in Africa, I trained a group of young people there in filmmaking. When I was in Guyana in South America, I was training people I was working with there. So, you know, like, for me, it's about facilitating voice, right? And empowering people with the technology to, you know, to promote themselves through the media.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And you're so right. You know, in certain places, the women in the United States, okay, there may be some people that say that we don't have the certain, you know, the same rights and so forth, and there's still that shove, that push, you know, to make it equal. However, you put us next to the women in Bolivia or other third world countries and things like that, and those women have no rights. They're lucky they're just breathing. So that old saying, we've come a long way, baby, there is something to be said about that, you know, in our country. You know, maybe we don't have quite the same equal rights as far as, you know, pay, okay? Some of the places I've worked, guys, we're doing the same exact job. They'd make a little more money than I would, and boy, that made me mad, okay? But it's so little in comparison to what you're speaking about. Okay, and you have so much to be proud of. You should be so proud of yourself. And
well,
I just want you to know. Oh, you bet. And I just want you to know. I just want you to know that this show tonight, a lot of people will be listening to it. And you're a very fascinating person. You've been all over the world, and all these things that you've done with all the videos that you've taken. And don't think that you haven't been, you know, like an example to many, many, many people already, the people you've come in contact with, and those who know you the most intimately, these people you spoke about first in the beginning, they've watched you grow. And I'm sure that these films that you're making, these video blogs and so forth and so on, yeah, you bet. I would love to watch them, and I would give you feedback because you have that right at the very end of your bio here. I hope you will find the episodes useful, James says, and welcome comment and feedback. Now, how do people get to your videos? I have to say this really quick because the show's going to end.
Yeah, well, the best way to reach me is through my website, and it's myname.com. So it's jamesbuffin.com. And
okay.
There's the Blue Ribbon video from Bolivia is there, and there's some other things about me there, and a whole bunch of music. We haven't talked about music, but that's a whole other part of what I'm doing. But that's maybe for another time. We'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
absolutely.
That's there's a contact form on my website, jamesbuffin.com. And there's, you know, I have, yeah, there's all kinds of info there. So I'm not going to plug my, you know, all the stuff that I'm doing. Cause I don't want to pitch myself. That's not why I'm here, but if you want to reach me, that's how to reach me.
Okay. Well, everyone heard that and I'm sure they wrote that down and that's easy enough to get to. So, again, I'm going to thank you. And, I don't really have time. I only have 52 seconds, something like that. So I'm going to thank everyone that's on the panel for you, you know, because I don't have time to go around. But for God's sake, keep up what you're doing. You're a very smart man. I don't care what you thought about yourself when you were a child. You're a very smart man, and you're an inspiration to a lot of people. So thank you so much for being here, okay? And, you know, come back again. You can listen in any time. You know that. And you are a family
yeah.
member, you know. So, and, of course, what we do is we usually give about a year, you know, about a year, and then we have you back on again, okay? And,
I'd love to. Thank you.
All right. So thank you so much, and I have to say good night now. Joe, can you play the music? I don't know if she can, Mike. There it goes. All right. Good night, and thank you.
Cause that dawn was
Blog Talk Radio.